everybody, and welcome to the China Tech Investor Podcast, powered by TechNode, seeking truth from facts when it comes to Chinese tech stocks and IPOs. I'm Elliot Zagman, and with me is a man whose favorite Pokemon is Pidgeotto. It's James Hull.
I think I only actually know one Pokemon, and it's Pikachu, if that's Pokemon. But yeah.
You never played the Game Boy game? Never got the cards? Never played Pokemon Go?
No, but I did have Magic the Gathering cards when I was in summer camp in like 1999. So yeah, I have a little bit of a nerd background. There we go. So disclaimer, nothing we say here is investment advice. Investing is risky. You can lose all your money or some of it. Be careful. This is an entertainment and somewhat informational podcast. So yeah, do not be taking this as investment advice. Yeah.
Speaking,
what's on the deck today?
Speaking of beloved anime characters, we're going to be talking about a stock that has outperformed, I think, the average Chinese internet stock over the last couple of years. A company that's really interesting from both a consumer perspective and from a business perspective, and that's Bilibili. So we're going to be joined later by a former colleague of mine and Bilibili fan, Erica Shen, to talk about what she likes about using Bilibili. And also James is going to talk about them as a business and looking at it from a few different perspectives. But first, let's go over just a few things in the news. Two things have rocked the market, I guess, over the last couple of days. And that is one, trade talks didn't go that well. And Trump is threatening another 10% of tariffs. But also we have a Fed rate cut. And is this the first rate cut in a while?
A long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really, really long time.
And both of those have influenced markets.
Yeah, so the talks that they had, I think they were on Tuesday, supposedly they ended early, which means that they didn't have much to talk about and continue talking about. So that's usually a bad sign. And then while we were sleeping here in Asia last night, Trump tweeted that he's increasing tariffs, 10% tariffs on $300 billion of Chinese exports to the U.S., which would include iPads and iPhones and all the stuff you buy at Walmart and all that stuff. So it's going to have quite an impact. And the Fed, I think, the big thing is Powell used this new word, this new phrase. He called it the rate cut a mid-cycle adjustment. And you saw kind of the market sell off after the rate cut. You saw the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield go down. Maybe that's a flight to safety. Maybe it's people don't think the rate cut will actually lead to inflation increasing, which is what the Fed's technically trying to do, sort of. But you wonder if it's mid-cycle. Usually they cut late cycle. Usually the Fed is late. They actually cut way too late. And then the cut signals when the recession's coming and when you should be getting out. So, yeah.
Well, you never want to say late cycle, right? Because then
you can't. Yeah.
So you should say mid, right?
And they can't say early because we have the longest expansion ever, right? So
right.
You can't say this is an early. So I guess they had to settle on mid, like something in the middle.
I guess so. I guess so.
Yeah.
Let's also, we want to do a quick peek into the hardware and smartphone market domestically in China, because there are a few things in the news. One is Huawei reported their first half earnings. Now, Huawei, once again, is not a listed company. They do these things a little more as PR events. So I think it's important to take them with a grain of salt. Their international smartphone shipments were down a little over 20%, but they continue to gain ground domestically within China. I believe the number right now is that they have grown to 38% of the Chinese market. But while a lot of that does seem to be at least just somewhat at Apple's expense, Apple also, when they reported their earnings their numbers in China were not that bad, and their stock was up after reporting it as well. So it does seem like, well, at least when it comes to smartphone sales in China, it is not getting hit as hard as many have expected. And even though the market is decreasing or is shrinking a little bit as it's kind of hit saturation, it does seem to be doing okay. And that's also good news for kind of broader consumers in the Chinese economy, but not necessarily good news for Xiaomi, who continue to struggle domestically, and their stock has now dipped below 9 Hong Kong dollars, and they are trading as we speak on August 2nd at 8 Hong Kong dollars and 86 cents.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. So on Bloomberg, I've created a little, I call it the China Consumer Index, where I can compare some of these stocks. And, you know, if I go back 1 year, Xiaomi is down about 49% on the China Consumer Index that I've created is down about 17%. Now, if you compare that to Bilibili is the opposite. It's actually up compared to the China Consumer Index here. So
that's a good segue. We could get back in future episodes to talk a little bit more about the smartphone industry in China. But let's you've been looking into this is our main topic today. You've been looking into Bilibili from a number of different perspectives. They have really kind of outperformed a lot of these other Chinese tech companies that have gone public over the last year or two. They went public in March of last year at, I believe it was roughly, what was it? A little over $10, was it like $11 a share? They went public at 11, right? And they've been trading above their IPO price ever since. Right now, they're just a little under $15 a share. And even as, you know, these other Chinese tech companies, particularly in media like iQIYI, for example, have struggled, Bilibili's been quite resilient and consistently strong. So what have you found out about Bilibili? What should investors know, James?
Man, where to start? So it's kind of, I mean, when you read about Bilibili, read other things people have written about it on the internet, Bilibili is compared to YouTube. And I think that's, you know, somewhat accurate. There's some very big differences that I'll touch on, but Bilibili is basically a website where you can upload videos, and you can comment on videos. You can share links to those videos, you know, in other social media platforms. So that's kind of like YouTube. Bilibili is very different though, because it started 10 years ago. So in June, they had their 10-year anniversary, which was kind of interesting. And a lot of people on like WeChat and Weibo and places, they were sharing, you know, kind of stories, their stories about Bilibili and why they like it and stuff. So it's kind of popped up a lot on social media here, but it's kind of a different app than YouTube, because they have this loyal and sticky user base. And I think part of that drives from, we'll talk to Erica about this, but I think part of it drives from that they started in a very small niche. They are expanding outside of that niche. So the question is obviously, can these users stay sticky as they add new users that are not in that niche? And I think we'll talk a little bit about the ways in which they they've created kind of user hoops that users have to jump through in order to interact with people on the website that might keep it kind of sticky. But, you know, it's left to be seen. So it's an online video app, right? And we all know that with iQIYI, Douyin, Kuaishou, let's see, Youku, Tudou, Xigua, all these other apps, this is like a very hot, highly competitive industry. And what I mean by that is that everyone's spending a lot of money on content, and that is it's a fast way to burn a lot of money. I don't know if it's a fast way to get a lot of profits, right? So that's kind of the key thing. So Bilibili, they've been acquiring companies. They just announced a little while ago they acquired the majority stake of a company that runs their one of their big annual events called Bilibili World. They do a lot of events. Events is one way they monetize. But I thought that was interesting. They acquired this and they made a point to say that there was no... They also acquired shares from unaffiliated shareholders of that events company. But yeah, so I see Bilibili is having a... it has a long investment runway, which I think is important. The problem is, what is the kind of incremental return on that investment? And that's kind of the difficult question. I'd say they're, when I look at their management... A lot of them, I think they came from Cheetah Mobile, which you may have heard of. It's kind of an early China internet company. And yeah, the founder is actually, I think last year was just 29 years old. So that's kind of cool.
Of Bilibili?
So there's like, yeah.
I thought that the, wasn't the founder, I thought he was older, like 40.
So that's the CEO. Ray Chen, I think yeah.
Okay.
The founder is actually, I think, started it with, it was just a website about anime, you know, like 10 years ago. And yeah. So then, see, I've kind of covered what is Bilibili. What are the risks when I look at Bilibili? I think, you know, if you look at their financials, they have increasing negative cash flows, which may take a long time to reverse. Content production is highly competitive. There's too many players and costs are rising. There's some reasons why maybe Bilibili might be kind of protected from that because they have such a large amount of user-generated content and that anime itself is sort of... I mean, they produce non-anime content, but I think they also produce some anime content. But anime is... Because it's... You don't need actors. You need voice actors and actresses. It's presumably cheaper, and perhaps even like making drawings compared to making sets and large, I mean, CGI stuff. I mean, that's going to be a lot cheaper. So,
yeah. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about this more with Erica, but one thing that was really interesting to me and that I kind of, you know, just looking into the company, just what really makes it stand out is how much it relies on this kind of more, I would say like a geek elite of these kind of core users that are also creating content in a lot of ways. And that creates this kind of like social club around the platform that I think, you mentioned this earlier, it creates just a degree of stickiness so that it's not so much as in, I think with iQIYI, we talk a lot about kind of they're making content and putting it out there, right? It's very much like the company that, you know, sells something directly to the users. You know, it's a lot more of kind of a social platform with Bilibili, it seems, where they're creating content and sharing it with each other.
Yeah. Maybe let's get to that with Erica, right? But just to finish these risks, another risk is that operating costs are rising. Like content needs to be reviewed, needs to be audited by actual people. So if there's some policy in China that if you have daily user-generated videos coming on your site, you have to have one person per certain number of videos that employed at your company reviewing that content. So it's like a perfect scale. So YouTube was able to grow without this kind of content review because they could just have algorithms try to do it. They didn't have to necessarily hire a bunch of people to do this. But because China, I mean, there, I guess you could hire cheaper labor to do this, but at the end of the day, like if you have someone standing there and trying to review something, anything they let go by that gets in trouble, like that gets taken down later, that points back to them. So there's like a human element of like, oh, I don't want to mess up. So you actually over-regulate because you don't. You might get in trouble of like, oh, you let something go by, ding. Oh, you didn't let something go by. You don't get any plus points for that. You know, like, I mean, so there's like a negative effect there. So that's the other piece, which ties the other risk is that ties into that is a government regulation. Bilibili has been shut down a few times in the past, and it can happen again. Like we've seen, I think this week, we've seen Xiaohongshu, the Red Book, little Red Book app has been shut down on Android and supposedly shut down on iOS. So yeah, what's special about Bilibili? So I think the key thing to remember here is that they own this platform and it has loyal and sticky users who have formed a community on their platform, right? And so the users tend to be loyal to the community, but I think there's also users that are loyal to Bilibili. Like I talked to a few people just kind of researching this company, and one user said something that kind of blew me away. I don't know. It was kind of interesting, but they said that they would be willing to donate money to Bilibili if Bilibili ever ran into like cash problems, which I thought was kind of
wow,
pretty intense. Like, I don't know if anyone would do that for Facebook, you know?
Yeah. Or Baidu.
Definitely not Baidu, probably. So, yeah, so they get their... I think I'm trying to figure out when we should bring in Erica. But so they get their online community, gets their strength, I think, from this quality of user interactions on their platform. And we'll talk a little bit about this with Erica. But one thing they do to ensure a standard of like kind of user interaction is the users themselves have developed their own like etiquette, self-moderation kind of mechanisms. And Bilibili, on top of that, has created features to help them moderate the community. And so like, if you think about online communities, the ones that thrive tend to be very strong on moderation. So like, I don't know if you use Reddit often, but the Reddit subreddits that have really good moderation tend to be the ones that are the best. You know, they keep all the riffraff out, they keep the negative energy, you know, kind of trolling, bullying stuff out. Right. And they have no problem. And so that requires people that sit there and like, or get notified by other users that are on it and like go in and like kick those people off. It's like a lot of work. And so they have, Bilibili also has a member exam, which is 100 questions, multiple choice. It's timed. You only have 2 hours to finish it. It's all in Chinese, and actually they make it very difficult. You can't even select, if you wanted to try to translate the Chinese into English or whatever, you can't even select it because it's all images and it's all terribly small. So this was it was kind of a Chinese test for me. I luckily passed it, but it wasn't easy. But yeah, so speaking of that,
do you want to just go into our interview with Erica, right?
Let's do it.
Okay, so here's Erica Shen. We've been talking a good amount about Bilibili as a business from an investor perspective, but that's only one half of what the company is. The other half is from a user perspective. So we have joining us today a real live Bilibili user, Erica Shen. Erica is a former colleague of mine and an English Chinese interpreter based in Beijing. Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, hi everyone. It's a pleasure. Okay.
How long have you been using Bilibili? And tell us, what do you like about the platform? And for people who don't really, maybe they're not from China, they've never used the platform before, how would you introduce it?
Sure. I mean, I've been an active Bilibili fan or user for, I'd say, the past 3 years or so. And I really like the platform. I like what it offers. I like the content, the community, and the experience in general. And I would say there are three main reasons that I'm really just into and interested in this platform. And the first, I would say, is the content, because as you know, you probably already introduced to everyone. So Bilibili is it's a platform that's centered around the ACG content. So ACG meaning anime comics and also gaming. So that's the center value or the center content that's provided to the users. So if you're a big fan of Chinese or Japanese culture in particular, and you like the comic and those kinds of things, so this is your go-to place. And I don't think there's any better platform out there for Chinese language users if you're a fan of ACG. And also, but it's not the whole story, though, because the other part of the content that they provide is actually user-generated content. So they have a lot of uploaders. So it's a very active and engaging community out there. And so that's the second reason that I'm really into this platform, is the people that's on there. And somewhat counterintuitively, because we know that a lot of the internet companies, their goal is to acquire as many users as possible, but not the case for Bilibili. Of course, they want users, they want people to go on there, but it's somewhat of an exclusive community in a sense. For example, if you want to be a full member meaning someone who can not only view content, but also upload or sort of engage with people by commenting or sending the so-called bullet screens. We'll get to bullet screen in a moment, but if you want to be an active member, you have to pass a test. So it's an actual real life test that is basically, you can choose the areas of your interest. For example, if you're a gaming fan, you can choose the gaming questions. And if you like anime or manga, you can choose that kind of questions. And it's actually pretty difficult.
I took the test a couple weeks ago. I passed just barely, but I picked computers and technology, and like one of the questions was like, when did how much revenue did Apple have, you know? And like that's pretty easy for me, and it's all multiple choice.
So exclusive geeks club.
It's definitely.
It's a club. It's more like I think that what it does, the test is actually screens out the haters, the bots, right. The ad distributors, the people who are not necessarily real fans of the genre or the content that they provide, and I think what it also does, maybe unintentionally, is it screens out older people.
People who haven't taken a multiple choice test in years are not going to want to take a 100 question multiple choice test. I mean, I did it because I like, I guess I'm a masochist or whatever, sadist. But
yeah, you could say that. Yeah. You're either masochist or you're really into the culture or you're really engaged in the community. It's a sense of camaraderie in a sense. So it keeps the community vibrant. It keeps the people there fun and engaging. So, and it screens out the hater or people who they don't want to be on.
Let's drill in on this a little bit. So after the member exam, so you go from level 0 to level 1, and then in order to get to level 2, you have to do more stuff. And at level 2, you're able to send like color bullet chats, you're able to comment on the videos below in the section below. So like, I mean, the way you get to level 2 is you have to do more things on the platform. You have to like interact with the content and engage, right?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty clever way for the platform to sort of drive up engagement, because a lot of people, once they get past that test and they're a full member, maybe they're not as motivated to actually contribute. But so the way you can level up is by either engaging or interacting with other users by sending comments, or you can upload stuff and so that you can be a contributor. And generally, if you're just normally using the platform, you get upgraded pretty quickly. And I think I'm now level 4 or 5 or something like that. And basically, at that level, you have already most of the features you can use. And
that's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess 3 years ago when you started using Bilibili, were there other options? Why did you start using it? What kind of part of the content drew you towards Bilibili?
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, because actually I am not a hardcore anime or manga fan. But the reason I'm there is because the people I like, the people I follow are there. Because, you know, there's, I talked about the UGC community, the people who create content, the people who upload content. And those are basically, it's a little bit like social media. You follow your friends and you follow the people who create the content that you really like. So because it's a vibrant community geared towards young people, and you can see all the UIs, and they're, you know, very colorful and fun and filled with cartoon characters and stuff. So you kind of feel like those are the kind of content that you like, and it's a community and it's a company that with a culture that you really are interested in. And that's why we're there, essentially, because other people and the content creators that you love are already there. So,
okay. And when, like, 3 years ago, were there other websites or other places?
I wouldn't say that. Because now that you see there are other so-called video platforms, like I think the big three would be iQIYI, which is actually invested by Baidu, and Tencent Video, and the other one, what's the other one?
Youku.
Those are big three. But those are the places that are not so community focused, because those are the places you go to just watch a particular show or a movie, and then basically that's it, because nobody actually engages or really comments or gets emotionally invested in those platforms. It's just somewhere. It's a bit like Netflix. You go there, you watch a show, and that's it. But for Bilibili, it's a lot more. It's that you follow the people who upload content. You follow the channel owners, and you engage, and you have conversations via bullet screen. And so it's more something. It's a place for you.
Let's explain the bullet chats, because I think that's kind of a unique thing. And like, I guess, could you explain what they are and how you have conversations on bullet chats?
Oh, that's very interesting, because now it's a trademark of Bilibili. So basically, when you think of Bilibili, you think of the bullet comments or bullet screens. It's translated different ways. But essentially what it is a real-time floating comment that actually it shows up as the video plays. So for example,
on the video, on top of it.
Usually on top of the screen, that's the default, but if you prefer, you can also put it somewhere else, and you know, in the middle of the screen or towards the bottom of the screen. It's your choice, basically. And what it does is that it enables people to have this sense that there are other people watching this video with you and commenting with you. It's like having a conversation with friends as you sit together on a couch.
Yeah. And some can be funny. Like, there can be jokes, and there are inside jokes, like stuff I just don't get at all.
You know, the people there are so, you know, people on Bilibili, as I mentioned, because they're young and they're fun loving, and it's basically, I think maybe 50% of all the bullet comments are wisecracks and just little inside jokes. And you know, they're so creative and they're so funny. They crack me up, and it's half the fun in watching a video on Bilibili is just to look at what people are commenting and essentially having the sense that someone is watching something with you. So even though you might be, so that's the good thing about Bilibili or the internet in general, even though you can be in a very small, maybe tier 4, tier 5 city in China somewhere, and none of your real life friends like the things that you do, but you can just go and watch one of these videos, and there are 100 people watching it together with you and commenting in time, and you can get to have fun together, have a conversation in a sense. So that's the value that it provides.
I have a question here. So the Bilibili, they're, as a business and as a stock, they performed quite well, and they've actually, you know, bucked a lot of the trend of these Chinese internet companies that maybe went public last year and didn't do so great. But Bilibili's done really well. And there's two questions that I have that are kind of that would be potential threats to the user experience. One that is more, one would be just about the need to expand a user base, right? So we've seen this with just about every platform. You know, obviously Facebook started out as something that was cool for college students, and then they had to just expand it, and then it's the thing that your grandparents use or whatever. And, or, I mean, the same thing with platforms like Zhihu in China that, you know, maybe they started off as real, and they're still, maybe still pretty good for, you know, finding knowledgeable, you know, other users. But then there's also a lot of people who, you know, maybe they don't have right answers, or they're kind of trolls, or they're kind of spewing hateful stuff and things like that. It's really hard to police quality. So one is, do you find that as they've been trying to monetize that the quality of the users has gotten worse? That's question number one. And then question number two is a little more China specific. One thing that we've been following with iQIYI is that as the regulators in China have cracked down more on the content, it does seem like that it gets a lot harder for these more kind of creative, artistic platforms to put out stuff that is both appealing and is okay with the regulators. So in these two areas, do you find that, how does Bilibili manage this from a user's perspective?
I think those are very interesting questions, actually. Yeah, I actually saw a message on Weibo the other day about someone just moaning that they're reminiscing because they feel like a few years ago, the community, the atmosphere on Bilibili is so much better than what it is today. And I guess in a sense, that's true because, you know, everything starts out fine, because if you only have a few people and those people are really kindred spirits and they really enjoy the same things, and because for Bilibili, it's a platform that's created by a fan of the genre of the ACG content.
So if I could just quickly, since I took the test recently, the first 40 questions of the test are basically, do you understand the rules of engagement on Bilibili? You know, like, and then there's 10 like true false questions of like, is this comment okay or not? And it's like, yes, okay, no, not okay. And wow. In the 40 questions, there were some like, should this one be reported? Like, what kind of comments should be reported? Like, if it's anything hateful or attacking or encouraging like a fight kind of thing, that needs to be reported. So they are trying to keep at least the negative. There is a lot of negative energy on the internet, right? And they're trying to kind of limit that.
Trying to promote positive energy.
Obviously. Yeah.
Isn't the right? Internet policy in China, they always use that term.
Yeah. And for your second question, actually, for the censorship and those China-specific issues or inconveniences that we have to face. Yes, of course. It's been noted recently that it's harder and harder for content creators to post some of the content on Bilibili because the monitoring and the review process is getting stricter in a sense. Now, maybe if you want to upload something and it does not automatically appear for everyone to be able to see it, it has to go through a sort of monitoring or like a reviewer needs to step in and see if the content is okay. And if yes, then it's successfully uploaded, everyone can see. If not, maybe you'll be asked to revise it. And that's, I think the platform is also straddling a fine line between creative freedom and the regulation requirements. And I think they've been managing so far, and I hope that I wish them best of luck.
Yeah.
This is a problem for Weibo. I mean, it has led, I think Weibo use has gone down a lot in the last few years just because they've kind of cut down on the big V comments and things they can say. But yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm noticing, I mean, it's sort of annoying researching companies like this because you start watching the videos and trying to figure out what's going on those websites. And they actually are pretty interesting because there's like multiple layers of meaning in some of these videos. Like there's music videos, and then people will create like an anime video that is played to the music video that has a totally different meaning, but then the words of the lyrics and the anime video sort of interact and it creates like a separate subtext. And it's so there's like a very creative way to get a message across if you wanted to, that maybe is not super popular or like necessarily green lighted easily, you know, on some of these platforms. I mean, you can talk about things on Bilibili that you definitely are probably not able to talk about on Weibo, which is way more open.
I wouldn't say that there's more leeway on Bilibili than on Weibo, because actually it's not a politically oriented web.
Right,
it's,
exactly.
Yeah, and nobody, I don't think anyone, maybe 99.9% of the people, we're just trying to have fun, all right? We're just trying to create...
No, I didn't mean to suggest that it's political. I think there's some...
I know there are some things that are sensitive in a sense, and it's very, the line is, I think you don't, the line is blurred. You don't know where it is. It can change very easily from one day to the next.
So can we just real quick before you go touch on kind of the different types of content on Bilibili and what you think is popular, like what are, besides ACG, that's, we've kind of covered that.
I actually have maybe a list of the people that I follow on Bilibili, and some of them, it's a wide spectrum, I've got to say. For example, we have this one guy who is actually a college student who creates these consumer tech review videos, and recently he got hugely popular because he created a 5G testing video.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so this is the type of content that you actually can find here on Bilibili, which is not something that you would typically associate with the website because it's tech-oriented, it's not ACG, it's not entertainment, but these kinds of people, these kinds of creators are actually on here. And also, you know, the gamers, there are a lot of people who live stream their game experience, and they're really good. They're great gamers, they have great personalities, they can talk you through, and, you know, for people who maybe are not, who cannot afford the games, or, you know, people just like to watch others play, and they're also hugely popular. And there are artists, people who do tutorials about how to draw a certain cartoon characters. And, you know, there are some other commercial companies on there as well. For example, I follow a lot of theater content, so you'll see all the major theaters in China. They have their own channels on Bilibili, and sometimes they do live streamings of press conferences of, you know, the stars, and it's also something that they do, and it's amazing that the content they have on there. And yeah, so I'd say it's a very vibrant community, and with creators for all kinds of content they can think of. And it's fun, it's geared towards young people, it has features that enables engagement. And yeah, so it's content plus the community plus the nice features, and just a very nice, very fun.
Okay, one more question. Are you like a Dahuayuan? Or
no.
Paid a member, a paid member?
Unfortunately,
and like,
no.
Why not? Or, yeah.
So, the other thing that I really love about Bilibili, I have to say, is that there are no ads. So there's no pre-roll ads to any of the videos. So that's different from iQIYI or Tencent, because they make you watch maybe 2 minutes full of ads, but Bilibili does not do that, which is great for customer experience. And I'm not a Dahuayuan because it's essentially because I'm not a huge diehard fan of anime or manga, or so that's what it's mainly for. It's for the copyrighted content, and
right.
so some of the stuff you can only watch if you're a Dahuayuan.
Yeah, some of the other copyrighted or licensed content is, they also have documentaries, which are, people I've talked to are very, very much like Bilibili because of the documentaries.
Yeah, those are great. I've just recently ventured into that sphere.
Yeah, Jilupien.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I have a great library.
They have like Man vs. Wild. They have a bunch of movies on there too. And if you want to watch the movie, you have to become a member. So you might end up becoming a member a very interesting thing is you can use some of your points from your level to become a member. So you can, like, if you engage with the content, you upload a lot, you can then transfer that and become, you, instead of paying cash, you can use that as a currency to become a member, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe some people who upload a lot or real content contributors with a lot of fans, maybe they will get to enjoy, you know, the content for free as well. But I think that's for a
small group.
Mostly people just pay cash if they really want that content. Because the paid membership for Bilibili, it started later than the other websites. I think it's just been around since, I don't know, these few years. But for iQIYI or the others, they started a paid model long ago. That's the difference as well.
But it definitely seems like there's that intersection between kind of arts and entertainment and the kind of social component, which just really kind of makes this, it creates something special that doesn't seem like there's a clear analog to, you know, in the US or outside of China, but it seems like a pretty special place. So anyways, we don't want to take up too much more of your time. You're on your lunch break right now, but Erica Shen, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, it's a pleasure.
Thanks, Erica.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So aside from Bilibili as a user experience, what about Bilibili as an investor experience? How did Bilibili make money, James?
So Bilibili, you can kind of think of it like a publishing business. It's a platform where people come to see videos and share videos and publish and distribute through their platform. So they monetize by publishing and selling mobile games. That's actually their biggest revenue piece. You know, just in the last quarter, that was 64%. It peaked at 84% in Q4 2017, has come down since then. And that's mainly because live broadcasting, the other piece of their revenue, has gone up from Q4 2017 from 7% to 21%. And then the smaller piece is advertising, which has gone up slightly from 5 to 8% to Q1 2019. And they have others, which is basically they have an e-commerce site where they sell like dolls for anime characters and things.
They're called figures, James.
Action figures. Gosh.
Or figurines.
Yes, I'm so sorry I called them not action figures. They also have events, you know, like Bilibili World and other. They have tons of events all over the country. There's always an event every month, just all over. And so, one of the things I like to do with these businesses that are online, sort of user based businesses, and because it's very hard to know exactly how much of their revenue is going to come from mobile games, how much is going to come from live broadcasting, and try to break those down into drivers. When I'm modeling something like this, what I do is I take their MAUs, monthly active users, which have gone up. I'll just keep for Q4 2017. They've gone up a lot. They've gone up from 71 million to 101 for the last quarter from Q4 17 to Q1 2019. So I take those and I divide by revenue, and that gives you your average revenue per user, right? And that's gone up a lot too. So Q4 2017, we're looking at about 10.2, that's RMB per user for that quarter. And then for Q1 2019, it's 13.56. But then I look at, I'm estimating, you know, some ARPU, I won't say the number, but I'm estimating some number in my model. And then I take total cost per user. So I'm adding up all their operating costs, including depreciation, amortization, and such. And I get that is increasing faster their revenue per user, right? And that's kind of the problem. And so, you know, we see 10.2 is their ARPU, and then TCPU for Q4 2017 is 10.7. Now, that spread back then was just 50 cents, 50 RMB cents. Now, that spread has gone up to 2.68 cents, and it's increasing. It peaked at Q4 2018 at 2.73. It's gone down a little bit since then. I think it probably, I'm going to guess, because it sounds like they're going to be increasing their content spending. My guess is that spread goes up. So we see less gross margin. So if you look at their gross margin in general, and I've seen some people on Twitter and the internets talk about how their gross margin is going to hit 40%. And that's going to take a really long time based on my analysis. But if you look at their quarterly gross margins, it's, you know, it peaked around Q2 2018 and at 24.3, and Q1 of this year it was down to 17.9. So, you know, this idea that gross margins, and they said, the CFO said this on the call, they didn't say when it would happen, but that they expect their gross margins to be 40%. I just don't see how they get there, because they also talk about how their content cost should be 50% of revenue. And if that's, then what did they do with the other piece of their costs, right? I mean, they have sales and marketing is like 13%. G&A expenses can be anywhere between 8 to 12. R&D is around 12 to 13. So, you know, just adding those up, we're already at 34. So I don't see how we're going to get, if you add 50% on top of that, their content costs come through in amortization expenses that go through cost of revenues. So, yeah, anyway.
There, Erica hinted at this. I don't think she would like this as a Bilibili user, but they seem to have some oil left in the well when it comes to advertising, right? That they don't run the pre-rolls. And it seems like that right now, I'm looking at Walk the Chat did a report a while back. I'm just looking at their source of revenue. Right now, advertising is 8%. I mean, they could definitely, you know, hit that harder and try to take more from it. But is that going to, you know, be kind of a betrayal to these loyal users that have, you know, really, really powered the platform, and that who really enjoy that they don't advertise that much on it?
Yeah, I think YouTube, the ads are really annoying, but you can kind of skip them after a few seconds. So maybe they'll do something like that. Or maybe they'll just make the ads enjoyable. I mean, that's really hard to do, to make every ad not annoying. But if you make the ads kind of funny, and I mean, one Bilibili user was like, yeah, the users told me this. They said Bilibili users do not like ads unless they're something entertaining or something kind of funny that takes some of their inside jokes and sort of uses some of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's maybe even harder to do. I will touch on one little piece that I found was interesting in their annual report. So they talked about how content auditing costs are increasing, and they break down their employees by department in their annual report. And you see their content audit employees went from 300 in Q4 2017 to 637. So it's an increase of a little over 100%. Whereas everything else went up, you know, platform operations was up 60%, products and technology 55%, content operations 30%, management, sales, and finance up 51%. So it's quite a big jump for that category. And, you know, that's going to make it, I mean, that's part of their operating costs, right? So I have an issue. If they ever hit 40% margin, I'll be very impressed.
All right. Anything else we should say about Bilibili?
I think we should, leave it there. I'm finishing up this report. It's in progress. I'll put it online. Maybe I'll write a little article about it too. But
all right, yeah. Cool. All right. Well, if you want to learn more about Bilibili, you can feel free to subscribe to techno.com/newsletters for your daily dose of China tech. And also follow us on Twitter. I'm at Elliot Zagman, ELLIOTTZAAGMAN. And James is at James Hull X, JAMESHULLX. And let us know, what do you think about Bilibili? Do you want us to cover more of them? Do you want less about the iQIYIs and the Baidus and more about these kind of like more unique, smaller cap companies? We want to hear more from you about that. Also, make sure to give us 5 stars on iTunes and maybe a positive comment as well. Give us a star on Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. Give us a positive rating. It really, really helps us out. I was checking the Apple Podcasts the other day and saw, you know, we can still go have some more reviews, but I noticed that there were some other prominent China tech podcasts that did not have as many 5-star reviews as we did. So thank you to our fans.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
Anyways, anything else that we should, that we're looking forward to this week? Anything else you're keeping an eye out for?
Just real quick on the reviews. I've been getting some feedback recently, and I love getting feedback on the podcast, ways to improve and, you know, things we should talk about. We're going to get to those if you're listening. And, you know, I read everything, every recommendation, every feedback. So please also send those our way.
All right, cool. Okay, well then join us next week.
Thanks, everyone.
For the China Tech Investor Podcast. Bye-bye now, everybody.